Yeah, when is the last time you would say you either saw a miracle or you heard about something and you said, man, the only way that could have happened was a miracle? And it doesn't have to be the big, huge, ginormous type that the media would pick up. We all have different things in our lives, and we see them go down. We think, how did that happen? Now, the question is, was there someone behind it? Is there a miracle maker? Or is it just sort of like stuff happens? We're in a series called True Stories, and we're taking a look at eyewitness accounts of people that saw Jesus do miracles, and they wrote it down. Last week, we talked about Jesus was invited to a wedding, and he enrolls the caterers to help him do this miracle, changing water into wine. Remember, there was three questions we have to answer. Jesus will invite us to help him do miracles, but here's the three questions from last week. Question number one is, am I willing to be told? Question number two, am I willing to obey? And then question number three, am I willing to take a risk? Now, last week as we talked through this, there was different parts of it that there's a tension. Am I willing to do these things? The invitation's there, and I get to participate in the miracle. If you get a chance to see that, you can go to the App Store or any phone, download the app, East Lake Church Utah, listen to those talks or any other talks. Now this week we're going to look at another miracle that somebody actually saw. Grab your note sheet and I'll read you the big idea. Physical miracles can cause spiritual results. So if you're taking notes, just jot this in the margin. Everything God does is designed to have a relationship with us, including miracles. He's not just bailing me out, although I'm glad he does. But everything God does is motivated by he wants to have a relationship with me, including miracles. So today we're going to take a look at a story, and as I read it through to you, I'll tell you why I think it's a great one to prepare us for Easter. So it's going to come up behind me. I'll read the whole thing to you. At the end of 2 days, Jesus went on to Galilee. He himself said that a prophet is not honored in his hometown. Who's ever been back home and realized, I had some, you know, problems back there, some changes I made in my life nobody could believe. That's what Jesus is saying. Yet the Galileans welcomed him, for they had been in Jerusalem at the Passover celebration and had seen everything he did there. As he traveled through Galilee, he came to Cana, where he had turned water into wine. There was a government official in nearby Capernaum whose son was very sick. When he heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went and begged Jesus to come to Capernaum to heal his son, who was about to die. Jesus said to him, "You people must see signs and miracles before you'll believe in me." The official pleaded, "Lord, please come now before my little boy dies." Then Jesus told him, "Go back home, your son will live." And the man believed what Jesus said and started home. While the man was on his way, some of his servants met him with the news that his son was alive and well. He asked them when the boy had begun to get better, and they replied, "Yesterday afternoon at 1 o'clock, his fever suddenly disappeared." Then the father realized that that was the very time Jesus had told him, "Your son will live." So the man and everyone in his family put their faith in Jesus. This was the second miraculous sign Jesus did in Galilee after coming from Judea. When there's a friend, John writes about this, eyewitness. And there's a process that's sort of weaving in this story, how people make decisions about God and how does they start to follow God. And that's what I want to look at today. There's no better time to invite people to church at Easter, and people are thinking about that holiday and what does it mean. Is it more than just a chocolate rabbit and little cool eggs and girls in pink dresses and that's all awesome? But is there something more to it? So it's a great time to invite people to church, and everyone's processing at some point. And this story has a really cool picture of what it looks like. And so write number one in your notes, admit I am curious. First step, admit I'm curious. Yes, the Galileans welcomed him, for they had been in Jerusalem at the Passover celebration and had seen everything he did there. So there's crowds of people that are following Jesus and they're interested in what he's doing. They're watching what he's doing. They like what they see, but they're keeping their emotional distance from him. And there's a reason that they're interested in what he's doing. He's been down to this religious festival in Jerusalem, which is the big city of his day. And he was down here. He did these amazing miracles that people saw. They were undeniable. And he said some amazing things. And he did some crazy stuff. At this festival that they had, there was a like a large cathedral or temple in the middle of Jerusalem. And at the end of the festival, everybody would go there for this big, giant church service. Now, here's the crazy thing that Jesus did, and one of the reasons the crowds were like, he's trending on, you know, social media right now, because like when he got to this festival and he gets to this ginormous church building, as he walks in, people had set up little shops all around in the courtyards, and they were selling religious souvenirs, and it was kind of like a tourist trap because everybody would come from all over the place to Jerusalem, and at the end of it, they would have this parade, and they would all come into this, you know, huge building with these courtyards, and they had figured out they could set all these shops up and sell people little souvenirs and religious trinkets, and they had turned the whole thing kind of like into a marketplace. Maybe you've seen that before. You go somewhere, and they're selling all this kind of stuff that the tourists are going to buy to show that they've been there, and Jesus sees it and he's so angry. Because the idea at the end of the festival was you would go to this amazing building and it would be a time where you could really understand, like they had designed the whole thing so you could be in this building and understand how much God cared about you. It was like a place to go focus, and they had turned it into a place to make money. He's really mad about it. And one person, even eyewitness person, says that he left and somehow found the materials to make a whip. And he comes back to this place and he's got a whip in his hand. I mean, I don't know if you would see Jesus this way, but someone wrote about it. And he's turning over tables and he's yelling at people, this isn't how it's supposed to be. And nobody's giving me any trouble because, well, he's got a whip. And people are like, we've never seen anybody like this before. I mean, it's like he has compassionate words and he does amazing things, but he's still super strong. So they're curious about him and people are wondering about him. And it was the last time that from the rest of his life, Jesus would always have crowds around him, people curious about him. And I think people are still curious today about Jesus. I think they're still wondering about him. How is he different or the same as other religious leaders and famous people in history? But the problem is, do they know anybody that they can talk to? You know how it is when you're super curious, but you're like, I don't want to ask a question because I don't want to feel stupid. A lot of people won't go to church to try to find the answers. They feel like if I go there, they'll just lay a guilt trip on me, and so I don't want to go, even though they may have some answers for me. Maybe you started out at a place of curiosity. It's a legitimate place to begin. Jesus doesn't push him away. Like, being curious about God is an okay place. When we started East Lake Church, we designed it so anybody that was just curious could come to one of the services or be with one of us, and it would be okay to just be curious. Not ready to make any decisions, no pressure. I'm just got some questions about the whole thing. So step number one, there's a crowd circulating around and they're just curious about Jesus. Who do you know in your life that's possibly just curious? And if you just were to, you know, build a little bit of a bridge to where they knew they wouldn't feel stupid, they wouldn't feel pressured, nobody would ask them to do anything religious, that they might ask some questions and talk with you. So it's a process, second part of the process. Write in your note, turn to God in a crisis. There was a government official in nearby Capernaum whose son was very sick. Now, it's one thing to watch Jesus do a miracle for someone else. It's another thing to need Jesus to do a miracle for me. And he's in a crisis, this government official. If you're thinking about him, think about like U.S. Senator. I mean, that's who this guy is. He's got a lot of power. He's got plenty of money. He's got lots of connections. He has the best clothes, the best house. I mean, he's access to the best doctors, and he's also a father who's facing a family crisis that he can't handle. All the resources that he has at his disposal is not enough to handle it. He's desperate. Desperation will always call me out of the crowd. I'm desperate now. Where do I turn? And we all hit those times when everything we have going for us, and especially when it has to do with family, and I understand the problem. I've had times in my life, maybe you've had times in your life where, you know, your job is going great and your money situation is fine. You've been able to stay on your diet for like 6 days in a row. You know, I mean, everything's just going great, you know. And then there's a family crisis. There's a crisis in my marriage, or the crisis with the kids, or, you know, someone in my family is going through something, some kind of a crisis, and you think, gosh, I just had all my ducks in a row. And it doesn't matter. Because when you have a family crisis, it overrides everything. There's a lot of desperation here as he approaches him. And that is a legitimate place that people can begin. Sometimes, you know, religions can make it seem like, or, you know, oh, now you want to turn to God that you're desperate. It, almost like it's a second-rate reason to come to God when you're desperate. But it isn't to Jesus. He's okay when someone's desperate and hears their prayer. You know, God, if you're up there, if you care about me at all, God, I need you. And he's just desperate at this point. So I ask you a question, who do you know in your life that is going through a desperate time? And even though they're not saying anything, is it possible that in their process, they're wondering, does God care about me? Would it be okay to approach him out of desperation? Maybe someone's looked down on them at some point or said to them, you know, maybe they feel like it's not okay to approach God when you're desperate. And you could be the person that would tell them that's if desperation. I think what Jesus understands is that if people are curious or desperate and they approach me and they're around long enough, at some point they'll realize they need me. So he doesn't push the man away. Now, number three, look in your notes. So it's a process. Ask God for help. Jesus said to him, "You people must see signs and miracles before you'll believe in me." So now at this point, it's kind of like how you hear the tone. And if you don't have a Bible or you'd like a Bible, there's free ones out there to grab it. And when you read it, everybody has to sort of plug in their own tone. Like, how did Jesus say that? And a lot of times the tone I hear is exactly how I see God. And so maybe someone reads this and they think Jesus is going, "Oh yeah, how you like me now? Oh, now you want my help. Sure, I have to show you." I mean, that I understand that. Have you ever held it over anyone's head? They didn't, you know, they didn't pay attention to your advice. And then they come back later and they need your help. And you're like, "Now you want my help? I tried to tell you when you started this what you should do. You know, I told you he was no good for you. And now you want to move." You know, I mean, has anybody ever held it over your head before? Because maybe you would hear this tone this way. But I think it's a different tone. I think Jesus is glad. The tone I hear him say is that, "I'm glad you want me to do something for you. I'm glad you're asking. I'm willing to show you a sign if it means you'll be with me." I think Jesus is welcoming him with this statement. He's saying it more like, "Man, you people, I am so glad that you'll still be willing to see a sign or miraculous sign and tie it to me that I could be with you." How do you hear it? You have anybody in your family? Or he's asking for this help, and you know, you think about it, He makes a really neat picture of what it is to pray to God, because he's willing to ask God to save him from something before he's willing to ask Jesus to be his Savior. Do you know, there's some people that they really believe that God's willingness to do something for them is based on their worthiness. You have to be worthy for God to do something for you. So they can't approach God at all, and they can just stay stuck right there because they look at all the different things in their life that makes them feel unworthy, and that looks like a lot of work. So don't ask God at all. And he is desperate, and he's willing to ask God for help, and he's not doing it on the basis of his worthiness. He's doing it because he thinks God cares about him. Doesn't have anything to do with her. And newsflash, nobody's worthy. I mean, God knows everything I've done in my past, and he knows the things I'm going to do in my future. He knows about the sins and mistakes I haven't even made yet. I never stand before him based on my behavior worthy. God does miracles for us because he loves us. Everything he does is motivated to have a relationship with us. He's thinking, I'm glad you're asking me to do something for you because it's drawing us closer. And as I do it, maybe you'll believe I love you. And then, maybe you'll love me. Who do you know that is stuck in feeling unworthy? And what could you say to him? How could you help him see that that's not the basis of it? You can approach and ask God for stuff. Okay, next one, number four. So it's a process, remember. I'm curious about it. Jesus doesn't push him away. I'm in a crisis. I'm desperate. Jesus doesn't push him away. Ask God for help. Jesus doesn't push him away. Number four, take a trust step. Then Jesus told him, go back home. Your son will live. Now, this man has walked 20 miles to see Jesus. So it's not like he's just around the block. This is 20 miles away. So you can get the idea that he... Every time that happens, I'm thinking like we're going to have a Star Trek moment or something. Okay, so it has to do with the theater. Sometimes I just chink in my chain. So he lives 20 miles away, and he is so desperate. He is, you know, somehow pleased. We don't know what illness his son has, but it's enough to make him think my son could die. So he walks 20 miles. He doesn't even know if he'll get to see Jesus, if anything like that will happen. And then when he sees Jesus, he's welcomed. He comes in and he tells him he's going to do the miracle. The man says to Jesus, come home with me so I can see it with my own eyes. I mean, he goes to him. He says, please, please, please. And then he says, come home with me. Now, this is a kind of an interesting part of the story. In the process of becoming a follower, so you're in the crowd, you're just watching. And then you're at some point, you're desperate. And so you maybe cry out, you know, if you're up there, God. And then at some point, you ask him. And then number four happens is when, and Jesus does this so often, and maybe you've experienced this, it's like he kind of turns the tables a little bit. If you think about it, what does the man have to go on at this point? I mean, he hasn't seen the miracle. He doesn't know if it's going to happen. And Jesus asks him to take a 20-mile trust walk back home to find out if God is who he says he is and will do what he says he will do. 20 miles. Have you ever had God sort of turn the tables on you? It's like you ask God for something. It's like, God, please help me in my marriage. You know, fix my spouse. You know, because it's always their fault, right? Or, you know, fix my marriage, God. And so Jesus says, okay, this is what I need you to do. I need you to unconditionally love and serve your spouse. And you're like, God, I asked for a miracle, not a project. You know. God, please help me in my finances. I have stuff I need, God. God says, okay. This is what I need you to do. Put me first in your money, and I'll give you everything you need. And you're like, God, I work hard for that money. It's mine. Have you ever... like approached him, the man says, Jesus, this is what I need you to do. And Jesus turns the table and says, okay, this is what I need you to do. a 20-mile walk of trust. And can you imagine? That's a long ways to walk, man. I don't know how you're doing on your steps thing on your fancy watch, but that's a lot of steps to get all the way back home. And the entire way you're wondering, I wonder if he did it or not. Like, what if I go home and he didn't do it? What am I going to say to my family? What if I get home and my son's already died? He doesn't have anything to go on at all at this point, other than an encounter. Are you on a trust walk right now? I mean, you expected one thing and you said, God, this is what I want you to do. And Jesus says, and this is what I want you to do. And as he's walking, he sees some of his employees come towards him. Here they come. And they're coming towards him, and he's like wondering what they're gonna say. Anytime you move forward, at some point, you come out of the crowd, at some point, God is going to do something with you, and it's during the trust walk that you find out, is God who he says he is, and will he do what he says he's going to do? And it can be a little unsettling because you're like, God, I already told you what I want you to do. And he says, I understand, and this is how I'm going to do it. Next step, write in your notes. Give my heart to God. While the man was on the way, some of his servants met him with the news that his son was alive and well. So here they come. They come towards him. We don't know how long he's been walking, but probably a long ways. And here comes the employees. Here comes the servants. They're walking towards him. He's bracing himself for what's going to happen. They're on their way. He's doing the trust walk, just like Jesus said to do. And as he's walking, they come forward and they tell him, like, your son's alive. It's amazing. The fever broke. And in the story, what I noticed was the man doesn't start cheering and jumping up and down right away. And I'm like, I mean, you walked all this way to get the miracle. You take the trust, walk all the way back. He asks a question first. Because here's what happens during the trust walk. It becomes less about the miracle and more about the miracle maker. He's on the trust walk, and he's probably thinking about his son, but at some point it transitions and saying, is Jesus God? Did I just meet my Lord? I just went there because I was desperate. I didn't have another shot at this thing. Somebody told me about him, and I wondered about it, and now I'm just wondering, am I giving my life to him? Am I going to give my heart to him? So when they come and they tell him about the miracle happened, he doesn't even ask him a question about his son in the context of, like, tell me what he said or what's going on. He doesn't run to see his son. He says, wait, hold up a minute. When exactly did you notice he got healed? Maybe he's wondering. Have you ever had this happen? Maybe he's wondering. He's like, no, wait a minute. Did Jesus really do this? Or did God really do this, or was this just a natural thing that happened? You know, you get up for a raise at work, and you pray, and you finally get the raise, and then later you think, wait a minute, did God actually give me the raise, or did I just work hard, and that's what happens in life? You know, sometimes you get picked for the raise. I mean, have you ever had the confusion, like, was God involved in this, and did he do it, or did it just happen? And he wants clarification because he's in the moment. Am I giving my heart to God and include him and give him credit and ask him questions when he doesn't? Or am I just going to go, it just happened. How about you? How close does the circumstances in your life align with his participation? That's what he's wondering. He's saying, and when they tell him the time that it happened, they said, well, it happened at this time. He's like, wait a second. He did do that. He did do it. And I understand why we don't give our heart to him. I understand the problem. Because all of us have probably given our heart to someone before and they mistreated it. They broke it or dropped it or disappointed us or hurt us. I mean, to really do it, that's why you take the trust walk. That's why it's important to have a process. So that's why it's important you don't rush people and force them to do things and ask them why they're not deciding quicker. You just let him move through it, and you let Jesus move him through it. And as you're taking the trust walk, he's trying to decide, am I going to give my heart to him or not? Who do you know right now? And you're like, might be here today. So am I really going to give my heart to him? Am I doing this? I'm patient. It's hard to do it. It's like, you're like, every time I do this, I end up wishing I hadn't. Every time I give my heart to another boy, every time I give my parents another chance, it's like every time I do this. And Jesus is in the exact same place as everybody else. He is trying to win the hearts of a broken-hearted people. And that is not easy to do. And he knows how to. He says, I'm okay if you need to see a sign. And as you're walking, trusting, will you give me your heart? Now here's the last thing, and just write it, share my story. I like this part. So the man and everyone in his family put their faith in Jesus. This was the second miraculous sign Jesus did in Galilee after coming from Judea. Can you imagine the story? I mean, I'm sure when he ran home, he's like, you're alive, and it's a miracle, and you can't believe this person that I met. And like, can you imagine, he was 20 miles away. Do you have anybody in your family that live in four states over, and you're like, what's the point of praying? You know, they live in Wisconsin or something like that. I mean, you know, he's like, Jesus is 20 miles away, and he just says it, and it happens. If you've ever wondered about his power. And he has a story. I want to finish up with this one because it's great to invite people to Easter in church. But I often find people that the problem is twofold. In their mind, they're saying nobody wants to hear. And that's a lie. Everybody is in this process somewhere. It's just a part of figuring out where it's at and being gracious and meeting them in it in a kind-hearted way. And then secondly is I feel disqualified. I don't know enough about the Bible. I don't know about doctrine. I don't read the Bible. I haven't been to church enough. I got drunk last Thursday night. I didn't get drunk last Thursday night, but it's like, you know, I mean, you look at your life and you say, I feel disqualified to share my story. And guess what? It's a lie because it's your story. Nobody else can share it. Nobody else could go home and say, I went and talked to him and I got through the crowd and he's like having this conversation with me. And then he says, send me home. And I'm thinking, did he really mean it? It's like, it's his story to share. Nobody can share your story about God. Nobody can tell someone, you know, I prayed about that for the longest time and I think I got the raise because God said so. You have a story. And your story can move people. Now, the big idea, right in your notes, Jesus cares about healing his son and winning his heart. All physical miracles can have a spiritual result. Everything God does is designed to have a relationship with us. Now, think about people you know in your life and where are they at in the process? Because everybody's at some point in this moving through it. And we get to decide how we want to help.